This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2025, held at United Christian School in Napanee, Indiana, on February 28 and March 1, 2025.
Okay, well, let's start this discussion. As you all know, we really do look at those evaluations that you all so obediently fill out. Let it open for a little. Yeah. And so this workshop here on onboarding teachers was the most requested request from last year. And so we decided we better take that seriously. And that came out of a discussion in a breakout last year called Tending Teachers. And Anthony had that. He made some comments about onboarding, which is a pretty cool new buzzword, you know, onboarding. You see that on you businessmen. You got to onboard people. And yeah, so everyone knows what onboarding is. We're using new cool lingo here. Anyone else need a handout? He made a few more. Okay, yep, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Let's think about how we're limiting this topic a little bit. What does this onboarding mean? So this workshop is not about tending teachers. It's not necessarily about supporting teachers. That's a relative topic for sure. We've addressed it various times at various CASBs. You can go on the doc and find probably two or three talks along that line over the years. But we've never had one maybe specific to this idea of onboarding or getting someone ready to teach efficiently and effectively in the classroom on the first day of school. Is there a process to that? So maybe one of the first questions in dealing with this is, when does onboarding begin and when does onboarding end? And if you're looking at my handout there, I guess I'm going to suggest that it begins with the interview. In fact, I think most of what I want to say here in this limited time could pretty much all happen in an interview, although there's a tremendous amount of work that goes, that's going on behind the scene to prepare for hiring a teacher for an interview. And you probably know that. You found that out. All right, so if it begins with the interview, when does it end? And because we're separating this from teacher tending or teacher support, it probably ends somewhere in the month of September as you switch into ongoing teacher support. So we're just establishing that so that you know, you understand how this subject is limited. If you came here for a full-blown discussion on tending teachers, that is not what this is. Or helping struggling teachers, that's in the other room going on. Okay, so this is specifically on, is there a process, you know, to work through, a systematic process for getting a teacher ready to teach school? All right, so I do want it to be a discussion because we kind of have a process, but it's not the process. It's just one way to do it. And I've enjoyed over the years thinking about how to efficiently work through the month of August. And as you all are well aware, we have high teacher turnover in our circles. Maybe we've gotten a little better over the years, but we have this high teacher turnover. So every August, we've got to do this process again. Probably for some of you, that has fallen into the hands of businessmen who have to run a business, and then the evenings are full of onboarding teachers. I don't know. I feel for you if that is what you have. I guess in that sense, we have it pretty easy. They pay me to spend the whole month of August back there, and it's an important time. Okay, so I understand that some of the things that I have to say, for some of you, it will sound very common sense. Well, like, yeah, we do that every year. But for others, maybe this will look a little overwhelming. This, you know, we come from a well-established school that's been around a long time and has a lot of things written down. If you're overwhelmed, just let me tell you how it was for me. I started teaching in 2004 after being in the family business for 13 years. So out of school for 13 years, and I, you know what, my years in the family business were very useful for school administration. Didn't help me too much in grammar class, but it was very useful for school administration. When I started at age 29, I became a principal and a teacher and a dad all in the same month. So, you know, it was a straight up learning curve. I didn't teach when I was single, like some people. But anyway, that all kind of happened suddenly. And at my interview, they hired me to teach because there were a bunch of bad boys coming to school. My chairman sitting back there in the corner, and he was one of them. And so all these boys were coming, and they needed a man because we just had ladies in the school. It was a very small school at the time. We have about 100 students now, but back then it was only about 35. Anyway, they wanted this man. So I sat down there at the interview, and simplest interview we ever had. This is about 2004, right? I had went to this school all my years. It's a well-established school. We've been around for 30 or 40 years. And here's this boy, they're hiring me. And we talked a little bit about what they could pay me, which was an unsustainable wage. That's what my dad told me. And they did actually pay me more than that, but they weren't ready to discuss that figure. And then they said, I said, yes, I'd do the job. And then they said, you'll be the only man here, so I guess you'll be the principal. Okay, what does the principal do? Well, he answers the phone. And so I started out answering the phone. There was one other phrase, answering the phone and stuff like that. And so as the years went by, I found out what stuff like that is. Okay? All right, so I got to invent my own job description, and it took years to put all that stuff together, right? So we had our little time as well. What I'm intrigued with, though, is that I went home from that interview, and it never crossed my mind that we were deficient in any way. That's just the way it was back then, you know? We just did it. And I went to Faith Builders back in those early days to try to learn this and heard people like Melvin Lehman doing his sink and swim situation back in the 70s. It was just the way it was. We just kind of grow into these things. And now we're here, you know, today. So if your school isn't, you know, on board with all of this, be patient. It'll come. You know, start writing some things down. Start collecting some of these things that are floating all over the place. Into booklet form and things like that. And don't think that all this has to happen just suddenly. Like my school won't measure up if I can't pull all this off, right? All right, let's get started here. I have it broke down into a few questions here in thinking about an interview. Teacher shows up for the interview, which in our circles means you're hired. We just need to see. We just need to meet you, but you're hired, right? And so we have the interview, and we have these questions that we're going to ask, and then we're going to send them home with about 8 essential things for them to start reading and mulling over, and that's where we'll start. And then I have a few things on the back. Maybe we can have some discussion about that. Okay. So to begin with here, let's think about how. Timing, can you all see that? I don't know if we can dim half the lights or turn it off once. Let's see. Does that help? That helps. Okay, we can still see to write. Let's just do that. Okay, let's think about how timing affects onboarding. And this is just basically to establish a few common sense points. Obviously, onboarding is going to go much better if the hire happened in March, which is what we aim for, right? But you've all had the experience, probably. It's August, and you've called 50 people, and they all said no, and who in the world is going to teach? And maybe some of you have even had the experience where a couple moms kind of got the year started, and you're still looking. You've had that? Mm-hmm. We've had it. Yeah, sometimes that happens. So what's onboarding going to look like when you're down to an emergency situation? I guess that's the point. Well, in March, you have lots of time, and don't waste it, you know. You have time to think about maybe sending them for some training, time to focus on big picture things, broad things, the why of education. There's two big things your teacher is going to be wondering about when they come to your school. They want to know why, and they want to know how, right? And which one of those do you think they are going to be feeling the most intense about?
How.
Exactly. They care about how. And you have just been to CASB, and you've been all full of these grand ideas, and so you're probably thinking more, why? But just calm down. I mean, those are lofty ideas, all that why stuff. But they got how on their brain. They just want to know how. Okay? Get them some help. Get them some good books. Get them reading. Get them signed up for some institutes, maybe even a summer term or something, if that's within your ability and opportunity. You can teach principles of teaching. You have time, right? You can read books about philosophy, like one of my favorite, which is Howard Hendricks' Teaching to Change Lives. Even you as board members should read that, or Sunday school teachers. Anybody ever read it? How many of you read Teaching to Change Lives? One, two, three people, come on. All right, go look it up. You can buy it on Amazon. Excellent book. It'll make you laugh, it'll make you cry. It's just a great book, okay? And it's not just for school teachers, it's for anyone who has to do any kind of teaching. So it's more big picture, okay? It is not the book to throw at a teacher that you just hired a week before school starts. They will just be jumping up and down, wondering why in the world did they give me this dumb book to read, and they'll miss the whole point of it. Okay, give it to them later. Give it to them at Thanksgiving, after they've started to feel some of the, you know, things that teachers feel. Okay, all right. Let's talk about August, because that's where it's really stressful. So this is like the emergency. You know, this is like when someone's bleeding profusely from a wound, that's not the time to go to them and talk about the importance of vitamins and minerals. Okay? You deal with the wound. And so what's the most important? They don't know anything about teaching, and there they are. But they were brave enough of a soul to come and at the last... I was hired in the last week of July. So it did kind of feel like I had some time. You know, a month is a long time, especially when you have a wife that can do your bulletin boards and, you know, some things like that. A month's a long time. I remember sitting and reading books and trying to get ready. But there is this serious panic mode that I don't know the subjects. And so the reading here, it might be that all your teacher can read in preparation for school is the teacher's guide. And there comes a time in the time structure of this whole thing where the teacher's guide is the most important thing to put into their lap. And so if you're down at the crunch, just get the curriculum into their hands. They are not worried about, you know what, you might not even want to send them off to an institute. Because at institutes, they talk big picture stuff, firecracker shots. They just want to know how your school works, how their classroom is going to function. And so go straight to that. That's all you're going to have time for. But I don't want to over-dramatize that, because if you have 3 weeks and you teach and you use CLE curriculum, A very wise thing to do would be to send them to a CLE teacher's training, because that they are going to teach them very thoroughly how to teach CLE curriculum, and they'll do it better than you, because you're trying to run a business at the same time. So get them to that thing, if you can. Is there any CLE people here? I think they do one in like the second week of August for those late hires. Okay, so you would have time. They would try to work you in. That would be important. So teaching the curriculum and the teacher's guides is you're down to the last. All right, I flew over that fast just to make a point to kind of get us started. Anything anyone wants to say at this point about the maybe the emergency feeling? I guess I'm just trying to say that it's okay if you go straight to the curriculum, because that's what the teacher's worried about. We good? Keep going? Okay, let's go to the next question. Personality. So how long into the interview before you've determined what kind of personality you have? They seem to fall into two categories. I went the wrong way here or something. What I got going? There we go. They seem to fall into two categories. Okay? They're either the fearful kind or they're the fearless kind. And it seems like it doesn't often get them in the middle. There was a year or two ago, we hired a girl. She was just bubbly and confident. I mean, her interview was across WhatsApp, of all things. And she was just bubbling away. And I sat there thinking, woo, we're going to be able to teach this girl anything. But she soon had her things she had to learn. Yeah, interesting how that is. Probably more often than not, we have the fearful kind. I don't know. What is it for you? So I don't know. What's your opinion? Would onboarding process differ depending on the kind of personality? Any thoughts?
I would say the fearful is more teachable.
Okay. The fearful is more teachable? Makes sense in my mind. Would that change the onboarding process? I think that we have found out that whether the person is fearful or the person is extra confident, got it all together, that does not change the process at all. They both still need it. The one is not convinced, the other one is. That's really the only difference. They both need it. And you really don't have to change your process too much. So I would say treat them both alike. That's the point I want to make here, actually. Some of them are fearful, and you can spend hours, and at the end of that, this has happened last year to me, we spent a whole day together. After I had given them all this information to read and come prepared, we spent a whole day together. At the end of the day, I looked at her and I said, "How are you feeling?" "I just feel so in the dark." Okay, so who's to blame there, me or her? Well, I can kind of feel it. Like, well, I guess I failed. But some people are just that way. You could spend 3 days with them and they would still feel in the dark. In fact, they will feel in the dark until they have spent a week teaching school. And that's just the way their emotions go. And so you just have to kind of keep bumping them along. 3 more days and school will start. And then there's the fearless that's just sitting in his chair with his feet propped up and he's watching YouTube. And like, boy, why did I say boy? Like, get busy. Like, school is starting in 2 days. Yes, it's cool. Just chilling. We had a guy one time. He was a great personality. I think we hired him because of his personality. But what a chiller. I actually had to call him one morning and remind him that he overslept and school was starting. Oh, and so then he'd come to school late. Yeah, well, you know. So they both need it, but for different reasons. The one needs the onboarding process to build confidence. The other one needs the onboarding process to get a reality check. And so just do it. But the point here is this. This guy over here, there is a temptation because of a whiz-bang interview where this person just seemed like they got it all together, just to sit back and say, you know, we got a good one here. We got a big fish. And just not maybe do much. And maybe they are really gifted and talented and can really go. But if they're new and have never taught, they need some onboarding. All right, enough with that. Let's keep moving. Four important questions to ask in an interview. Now, these can be asked in different ways. I just, to make my outline work out, they're all four questions, but they could be framed different ways. And I am sure that if you've had two interviews, you've probably asked these questions. This is not, anything that's going to strike you as amazing. It's just part of it. All right, the first question that can help to orient and give direction to the onboarding process is the question, look at them and say, what are your experiences? All right, this is a good conversation starter. If this person has had a lot of experience with singing in choirs, maybe they've been to music camp, they probably have, maybe the onboarding process for music is not what it would be if it was otherwise. And maybe you can plug her right into teaching fifth grade music because she's had experiences. Or you could think about the other way. Maybe she's looking at you or he and they say, we've just never done anything. Well, then you've got a lot of work to do. So the experiences can help you channel your energies, and maybe the onboarding process can be more efficient because you know what they have had experience with and what they haven't. Have they had experience teaching CLE curriculum? Maybe in another area, in another school, or maybe they went to school and had CLE curriculum and you use it. Well, that's a benefit to you. This year I'm teaching with my daughter, who came through our entire school program. Onboarding her was easy for a lot of reasons. First of all, she had to deal with me all her life. And second, she came through our program. So plugging in and onboarding was a pretty simple process. Because of the experiences she's had. Another one is, what are your interests? This is an interesting question because it will bring out if they are, well, okay. So you probably don't want to say, what are you good at? We Mennonites have been very well trained in the virtues of humility. And so we don't like to talk about what we're good at. And when a 21-year-old shy girl is sitting in front of three big board members, she's just a little intimidated about being really brave and saying, well, I am really good at it. It's just not going to happen. We just don't do that. So instead, ask her what her interests are. That will be the same thing, basically. You'll still get what she's good at, because interest is, it's like I tell my algebra students. Intelligence is 90% interest. If you're interested in something, you're intelligent in it. And if you're not interested in something, you're as dumb as bricks. And you're kind of proud of it, actually. Okay? And so it works that way. So if he or she can talk about their interests, you will find what they like and what, consequently, they're good at. Now, this is being all philosophical, but that's a start, and that can help with onboarding. Of course, the opposite is true. Then what are you going to do? Turn around and say, what are your weaknesses? Well, we're not good at that one either, are we? You like talking about your weaknesses? We all have them. If you haven't figured out your weaknesses yet, be a school teacher, and you will. So what should you ask instead? Well, you can ask, what are your weaknesses? What do you struggle with? I like to ask it this way, what are your fears? What do you fear most about this? When someone gets to talking about their fears, again, I guess this is being psychoanalytical, but when people talk about their fears, they are actually acknowledging their weaknesses. And then the fourth one, what are your plans? This is an important one, especially if you've hired them in March. If you've hired them in March, the pressure's not on yet. And they have plans. You know how our young people are today. I mean, you know, 90% of the time you're going to be hiring a 20-year-old. And they've got plans. So you start talking about what all you plan to do in the month of August. Well, I had a trip to Kenya planned for the first week in August. That won't suit me. Oh. All right, well, we'll try to work around that. How about the second week of August? Well, we had a wedding in Wisconsin there that we wanted to go to. Do you all have this happen? And before you know it, when are we going to do this? I mean, like, you're going to teach school. So, have any of you just said, we're going to hire you, but, you know, the month of August, you are ours. Is that too strong? We caught you. We reeled you in. You're in the boat. I don't know how you feel about that, but we've tried to be understanding. But there's things we want to do in the month of August. So try to get them moved into the community by the last week in July, some things like that, you know, and kind of tell them what you have planned for the month of August so that they don't start making a bunch of plans. Better do that in the interview so you're sure to have them when August rolls around. Because young people these days, boy, I mean, they seize every opportunity they can. Something else that's important here, I really believe that this should be part of a hiring interview. This will probably do as much to help the onboarding process as about anything. But when you hire a teacher, make sure you get two things out of them. First of all, make sure they understand that you will be, if all things go well and they end up being amazing, that you plan to ask them back around Christmas time. And that they should be thinking about that they need to give an answer about Christmas time. Like coming back, okay, so Darren goes around there at the Christmas program and catches up with all the teachers and kind of formally invites them back. And then we kind of expect an answer sometime in the month of January. We want to know. We do not want you, you know, taking till May to decide if you're coming back or not. Is that too hard? I mean, like, only half of the year went by. I don't know if I'm going to survive March or not. Well, there again, we're going to try to keep the big fish we caught, right? So we want an answer in January before things get too tough. Okay, that's the first thing. They should know. It's only good communication that they know that you'll be asking them, you know, you'll be asking them in January. And of course, if things aren't going so well, that should be communicated way before January. Don't let any teacher know they're going to be fired in a cold like that. All right, the other thing is, in that first initial interview, tell them that if they do decide, or when they do decide to retire from their great school teaching career, that they give you 1 or 2 days in the month of August to meet with the new teacher you hire, because they know more about what goes on in that. There's no way as a school principal that I know everything that goes on in all the curriculum across all the rooms of the school. But the lady that just spent the last 2 years in second grade, she knows, and she knows very well. So she's my best asset to preparing the next second grade teacher, right? And so when we hire them, we kind of have it in our staff manual. I'll show you later, actually, that there's this little thing that's part of the teacher's job description, that when they quit, that they still come back in August, or at least if they're in Kenya by then, that they have a Zoom meeting or something to talk to the new hire or to spend a day with the new hire. So if you can reserve that up front, and they can keep that in mind, that that's kind of a policy you have, and that can be incredibly helpful to preparing the next teacher. Anything anyone wants to say about these four questions?
Just what you mentioned here at the end, I think I had the opportunity to bring in a young fellow into the classroom I had been teaching this past year. We had here, he was had agreed by March, and I got to even teach with him a couple of days or weeks at the end of March and April, and it made the transition so smooth, because then he had a little bit of teaching experience, he had a lot of watching in the classroom, and that just made the next year go to the switch to a little role.
Absolutely. The ideal situation.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, you had it.
Does anybody hire for life?
Hire for life.
Or hire until you decide to quit.
That made shivers go up and down my spine. Shoot. Okay. Who wants to comment? Who's done it? I'm going to see a raise of hands. Hey.
We hire and tell them we're not going to ask you every year.
Yeah.
You let us know when you're quitting.
Mm-hmm.
By January, we want to early.
Yeah.
But any good other job...
Yeah.
You don't go and ask if you're going to work another year.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So we have about four kind of long-term teachers at our school that Darren just kind of sheepishly comes around and says, well, you know, what's going on here? And then we, but it's a given. We're there until, and I plan to give, you know, 2 or 3 or maybe 10 years notice before I quit. A significant, you have to, after you've been there for a decade or two. That's only wise. Yeah, okay.
You have. I was just going to say, would you do that, or the people that do long-term or for life, however you want to say it,
yeah,
is that for first-year teachers as well, or does that only become applicable after second or third year, say?
Don't look at me.
So the way we do it is it's first-time teacher as well. Now those, I will have a conversation, or one of us will, before the January board meeting. But if you're not coming back, you are required to tell us by the January board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But we do not ask our teachers back every year anymore, and that was one of the best things we did to take pressure off of our board.
Yeah, the constant.
Right. And yeah, the other thing that before we did that, we discovered that it's easier to ask them back after the Christmas break because they have de-stressed.
Yeah, okay.
But
yeah, good point.
Yeah. I like his point. We don't ask workers back.
Right, we don't. That's exactly right.
So I expect them to just teach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good.
I find it sort of intriguing that I'm hearing people asking first-year teachers by Christmas time. We have a policy here that we actually don't ask them till March, because typically first year teachers by Christmas time they're ready to throw in the towel.
Okay.
They have just a little bit more, I'm open.
You know what? Maybe we are really stressing ours out, but we've tell them that at the hire, and so they're kind of expecting. But I can think of one or two situations where it was going pretty stressful at Christmas. And we have made exceptions. Like, if you need a couple months yet, we've done that. Yep. Good. Yep.
I was just going to say, a lot of times it's at Christmas time, simply to get ahead of the pack of all the other boards.
Exactly. You're funny. Yep. Absolutely. Okay. Well, there's a whole lot of things you should send home with a new hire. And so let's talk about that. And I'm anxious to hear some of the things that you do for this. Let's go to that second part here. What should you send home with them? All right. This probably isn't fair. We heard talks today about squeaky tight budgets and things like that. But and some of these schools represented here are probably small and can't quite do this. But I would be interested in how many of you give free enrollment to all summer training for teachers. Yeah, that's a nice set of hands. Yep, good. Now, how many of you think that Faith Builders Teachers Week is going to do all the onboarding? Yeah, don't do that. So probably they want to go. Yeah, teachers enjoy that. Those are good experiences. But there's still a significant part of the stress. They want to come home. They want to know how your school does it. And how things go at your school. They want to know your culture, your curriculum, your traditions. They heard all kinds of amazing things at Teachers Week, 80%+ of which they will not be able to use. That's one of the things that amazed me. I went trucking off to my first Teachers Institute over there at Muddy Creek 20-some years ago, and, oh man, no one in this room probably even remembers Dwayne Tucker anymore. Anyone remember him? Okay, we've got a few people that still do. He was there, and I laughed at that man all day long. I thought it was great. But came home and said, I don't remember a thing he said. And that would make him roll over in his grave if he heard that, because I think he thought he was a pretty convincing speaker. Isn't that something, how that works? Anyway, I just stood there and like, why did I go? What was I to do? And then it was just the pressure of, here I am, and the grammar book staring me in the face, and I've never heard of a gerund in my life. All right, but still, we should go, and we should give some free enrollment. So one of the things we do at our school is first-year teachers get their way paid, and I think we're even trying to work toward even ongoing. And there again, that's a big community that can contribute probably more than a small community. Anyone want to say anything more about this point of getting our teachers to trainings? We have more opportunities today than we ever did. It's great.
That'd be a question. I know that every situation is different. I've got a daughter who is planning to teach next fall, first year, first time. I am encouraged. She's teaching in her school that she grew up in, so I realize there's some differences here. But I am encouraging her not to go to Faith Builders this summer. I am encouraging her maybe this spring to spend some time in that classroom with the teacher that's there. Take some time this summer to kind of plan her summer out and do some prep work so that she's not coming to August and hammer down to kind of get prepared. Go ahead and kind of plan out what's that you're going to work on. I want to send her to Faith Builders next summer because now she has some hooks that she can hang things on. Mm-hmm. Any thought to that?
Yeah. No. So how many of you would agree with that, that her spending time on her own classroom is more important than Faith Builders summer term or Teachers Week? What do you have in mind? You have like the 5-6 right. week long right. summer term in right. mind. Okay. Does that make sense? I would amen that. That is important. The summer term. I hope there's no Faith Builder people in here. We'll be in trouble here. But summer term is excellent. I went in my third. I taught 3 years before I went, and you can digest so much more. Now the summer term has an advantage over Teachers Week. Teachers Week, when you come back from that, you just heard all kinds of. We call it firecracker shots. That's what we call it. Just that was amazing. That was amazing. But nothing flowed. It's hard to be systematic. But when you go for a 6-week term, you actually work through I worked through I never had Algebra 2 and Geometry when I went to school, but, you know, old Mr. Cock took me through an entire math course in 6 weeks. I mean, it was amazing how much we polished through, and it was very systematic, and I came home actually feeling like I learned something. But one single teacher's week, and it's over. So yeah, I agree with what you said. Now, maybe there's some more comments. I think someone else.
I was just gonna say, when I started teaching school, I went to Faith Builders for Teachers Week before I started, and I came away inspired. The next time I went, I learned things.
Yeah, that's right. Amen. Yeah. And that inspiration is not all vain. I remember being inspired by those men and people that could really do that. And it you come home feeling like you don't know how to apply it, but it still gives you the push. There's still an inner push to keep trying and keep going, which is what a teacher needs or they're not going to last. Okay, anything else? Let's go to another one. Boy, I'm forgetting what time this thing... let's see, 3:45, so we are down to, all right, let's keep rolling. Okay, so the other essential you send them home with is last year's teacher info. Okay, we already talked about that, so let's keep moving. A list of books for teachers, and I'm sure you have your list. I just put a big list on the back of your handout. Some of them are, you know, kind of overarching, but some of them really get into the stuff, right? So if it's February when you hired them, you can give them Teaching to Change Lives, the 7 Laws of the Learner, and Teacher Talk, and some things like that. If it's 2 weeks before school started, get them the Classroom Manual from Christian Light. Okay, all right, we already talked about that, so let's keep moving on. There's some ideas for you. Full access to the school. I don't know how y'all feel about this, but you should send them home with a key and give them full access to the place. Come visit the place, look around, look in your classroom, organize things if you want, start doing bulletin boards. How many of you encourage your new hires to go ahead and work on bulletin boards in June and July so that's out of the way?
Absolutely.
Yeah, get that done. You've got half the summer to work on that. Now, how many of you would get... if it's only 2 weeks before school starts, you would say, don't worry about the bulletin boards, we'll have a mom take care of that. You focus on your teacher's guide. And then, of course, you got to find a mom, but yeah. You all got wives, right? They can do it. Yeah. Okay. All right, let's keep moving on. Full access to the school, the teacher's supplies, all the stuff. Okay, another one is the school constitution and handbook. And I brought some of ours. I don't put this on the dock because it has lots of sensitive information on it. So it's not on the dock. You might be able to find things like this on the dock. I have a few here for those of you that do not like technology. If you'd like to see a copy of ours, help yourself. The one is the staff manual that we hand out to teachers. The other one is everything about our school. And some of you have maybe seen these before because I've handed them out before. But I only have 5 of each, and they're here. If you want one and you know how to use email and all that, I have my email address here, and I'll email it to you if you'd like to see our Constitution and Staff Handbook. I will just unplug here a minute, and if I go a little over time and you need to leave, go ahead. But we have some time here yet. I'll just pull up the Staff Handbook, say. This takes a while to make, I know, but I imagine some of you have made something like this. All right, so you can't read all that, but that starts out with things like, I'm probably going the wrong direction, all the responsibilities of a principal, all listed out in writing, all the responsibilities of a teacher, listed in categories, the teacher's responsibility to the board, teacher's responsibility to the school and church community, teacher's responsibility to the principal and teaching staff, teacher's responsibility to the students and their parents. It takes a while to make a list like that, but this is the kind of stuff that makes a new teacher feel like, man, I can do this. I know exactly what's happening. And it's written down. So if they forget, you always know where it is. A list of all of the traditions and activities that will happen throughout the course of a year at our school, which is quite a lot. And it used to be that I would forget to remind the teachers that a certain event is coming up. And they'd be like, what are we doing? I never knew. Yeah. And so I finally made a list. And we talk about it. It reminds me. Stuff we can talk about in staff meeting. And you know what? When I get home, we have one of those wintertime things coming up. And number four here. Yep, that's got to happen here in the next week. So everyone knows it. We're planning it. If you do nothing else, at least get them this, which is a beginning of the year checklist. They love this. It gives them the confidence that they've checked the boxes and they are getting ready. So at least do that. I feel like I'm rushing along here, but then we have an end of the year checklist. All the things that need to happen before you run back off to Illinois for the summer or wherever you hired them from. This is a day and age of tech, and it's a confusing mess, but a sheet of paper like this can help streamline a lot of that. There's a bunch of tech stuff. This one, I assume that probably some of you, the boards take care of all the field trips. How many of you have that, where the boards just take care of all the field trips? That's good. Darren, did you see how many hands went up there? Isn't that neat? Okay, well, in our school, we still have the teachers get that together and get the parents involved, and it does make good camaraderie between parent and teacher. There's some benefit to that. But what they really want is what in the world to do. And so we have all these papers spelled out with all the field trips and all the contact information and when it needs to happen. And I found out that this is one of the things they worry about. But if they have this, they can at least find their way. So there's a lot of that information in there. The do's and don'ts for using technology in their classroom, how to handle substitutes, where to get transportation options if you want to go on an afternoon out. Your responsibility to the school as far as school maintenance. So you see we have a whole list of 22 some jobs that help to keep the, you know, a well-run school boosts everyone's morale, and everyone has one or more jobs. So we divvy out the jobs and everyone knows their job. And then we got a little section down here called teacher enrichment that is supposed to make everyone want to come back for life. That says some things about, you know, you can rent the school for free and we'll pay for a summer term possibly. And yeah. So that's something that goes home with every teacher. And then in August when we meet, we spend... This gives me my plan for the day. When we meet as teachers, new teachers, hello, welcome, let's introduce, and now let's sit down. And we open up the books and we just start working through, and it's a systematic thing. One of the things that you don't want to do to a new hire is just tell them, I'll meet you on Tuesday evening back at the school. And so you meet her and she's here and you're going to onboard her, and so you start flitting from one thing to the next all over the school, telling her this and telling her that, and after about an hour or two, you've said a whole lot of stuff that went in one ear and out the other. She didn't want to lose it, but she lost it. It's just too back and forth and here and there. And I've already told a new teacher, we might be going through this systematically, and they'll say, hey, I'm wondering about this. And I'll say, that's an excellent question, but that's about grading and scoring material. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. Let's just relax. We'll get to it. But we're moving through this sequentially. It's so much better. It's digested better when it's sequential. So avoid that just ramming here and there and showing her this and, oh, incidentally, here's this and this is how this works. Now let's come over here and do this. Oh, that drives a new hire nuts. All right. Any questions about this? I went through that really fast, and that was information overload. But how many of you have a staff handbook? Yay! Good. All right. Very good. And then the Constitution. There's some things in this book that are important to everybody. I'm kind of jumping in the middle of it, it looks like. No, that's not important. Let's go to something that might be. How the library works, all that written out. There's my discipline plan. There's that learner's commitment some of you were asking about, which is a fancy way of saying the rules. The Bible memory schedule, all the field trips, the roster. I'm going through this backwards, sorry. But all that stuff spelled out in charts. Once the charts are made, it's not so hard to update it each year. It's still a pain to put together the student chapel schedule, but other teachers can help with that, and it's manageable. But I consider that to be the two most important things that I send home with a new hire. Our reference booklet, all the stuff about our school, and the staff manual. And I suppose it's kind of like that for you all too. All right, back to this. And I'll put it back up here. I don't know where we were, but okay, a resource list. So this is something that teachers like. We have in our community, well, it's not exactly in our community, it's up in Myerstown. How many are familiar with that JDM outlets that does the bulletin board printing? Okay, that's handy. Tell them about that for sure. They can get on their computer, design something pretty slick, you know, all minimalist, and JDM will send it in the mail. It's pretty slick. Snap it up there. And so bulletin boards, that's one. Websites that are very helpful. Find websites that are, make a list of websites that are good for spare time games. One of the things that really stresses out new teachers is what am I going to do in all the spare time? They're going to go crazy on me. I got to give them things to do. Sudoku puzzles, did I say that word right? Okay. Downloadables of all kinds that they can stay busy doing. New teachers want to have resources in their hands. They're not exactly always sure where to go. Make a resource list for them. And that's one thing that I would like to, that I have on my list to create and put in our staff handbook. Okay, what do you all think of this? How many of you do this? Assign a mentor to a new hire. Ongoing throughout the year. Okay, some of you raised your hands. There's various ways to do this. This is not a, for us, it is simply that I have a co-teacher, a lady, who has taught for a decade. And there again, that's we're blessed in that way. And she takes the elementary lady teachers twice a week, and they meet in the library, have prayer together, have basically like a staff meeting together and talk about their issues like ladies do in that freedom, in that environment, and I take the men. And that's what we call our mentoring. It's not a maybe a one-on-one so much, but it does provide that. Now, any other comments about the mentoring side of things?
Teachers find someone outside of the school.
Yes, okay. But someone that can help them with how the community functions, the spirit of the community, the culture of the community.
Just the mental load of teaching school, getting away, being able to vent some of those things that are going on.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm.
How do you find that when, like in a smaller school where all your teachers are three max?
They have, I'm sorry, I missed.
How do you go about finding a mentor, accountability partner for them when basically all your teachers are
new?
New, I'm saying new is on three of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Outside of the school. Yeah, who is the person to mentor when everyone else is outside of the school and your teachers are all new?
The board.
Oh, did you say it?
No.
No. Okay, what do you suggest?
Outside, someone from the church.
Yeah.
Someone get who's taught in the past.
If it's a young lady, get a lady, get a mom involved. One of those moms that's really good at, you know what, she's already going to be busy. Because it's the busy people that do it the best. I'm sorry. I don't know why it is that way, but that's the way it works. It's the people that are already carrying some responsibility. But yeah, that's important. I'm more and more convinced of how important that is. This year, teaching with my daughter, the various times that she comes home and says, "Sister Jean said," and things like that. It's just, yeah. We've had some difficulties in the past where a teacher just kind of overloaded the thing, just really spilled, and it gets a little weary, and you might have to do a one-on-one in those. I mean, we could talk for another hour on this problem, but they don't necessarily have to have a lot of teaching experience. It's more maybe an emotional enforcement support. Spiritual support, friendship, helping them know how the community works and thinks, and especially if they're in the third week of school and something is really going wrong. All right, well, we're over time, but you're still sitting here. yes. Yes, there is. Okay, that was a hint. All right, let's keep going here. Not a big one, but a schedule of preterm events, like a schedule of what's happening in August. So this is back to the thing of make sure you discuss with them what you have planned so they don't go planning ahead of you. Because they will. I mean, young people are trying to figure life out and they schedule themselves school. So be sure to tell him some things. All right, look, little picture here on the back. This picture can mean a lot of things. You all know what's happening there. It's the thing we call metamorphosis, right? But my point here is not really metamorphosis. My point is that after you've done all this work, you still have to kind of step away and say, bye-bye, I hope you can swim. In the little metamorphosis stage, you see the little, you know, butterfly in there fighting in his chrysalis, right? You've all heard the famous story. The boy reaches up, cuts open the chrysalis, butterfly dumps out, and then what? You have a butter crawl. He never flies. It has to fight. It has to work. Healthy stress is good, is an excellent part of the onboarding process. Okay, there must be healthy stress. And so there is this time when you open up the classroom door, welcome them in, shut the door behind them, and walk away. And then you come back a few hours later and see if they're still standing up. And if they are, there's a little bit of blood going to the ends of the wings. And eventually, they'll be going. And then you segue into teacher tending, which is a whole nother discussion. All right, thanks for your time, and hopefully you have success with continuing to develop your onboarding process.